Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Sunday evening. Joining us from New York City, got to be going to Philadelphia soon, Tim Bontemps.
Going to Philadelphia on Wednesday for Sixers Celtics, barn burner. Maybe two top teams in the league at that point. We'll see. Hello, everybody.
Sixers off to a 4-1 start and one over. Could they play in the in-season tournament on Friday? I don't remember.
They didn't. They played the Suns on Saturday. And beat the Suns. Yep.
It was like a noon game for, I guess, for Europe's benefit.
1 p.m. 1 p.m. afternoon tip.
Noon Central. That's right.
Noon Central.
Joining us from the American Airlines Center in Dallas, Texas, where he just watched the Mavericks move to 5-1 on the season by defeating the Charlotte Hornets in a surprisingly good game, is Bam McMahon.
Howdy, partners. It is good to be here, even though Bontemps sounds like he's been gargling acid or something.
That's one way to put it. LaMelo Ball was firing on all cylinders the fourth quarter of that game.
Yeah, he tied an NBA record tonight.
Did he really?
Yes, absolutely. Most fouls committed during a triple-double. Also in any game.
I thought that was what it was going to be.
In any game.
Is he allowed five or was he allowed six? Which was it? Allowed five or allowed six?
No, look, hey, LaMelo did put on a pretty good show. Luka had, by his standards, a mid-performance. But the Mighty Mavericks pull out another one. Hey, 5-0 when Jay Kidd's coaching him. He gave Sweeney the wheel one game, and they brought it back.
Now, that was an in-season tournament game. They played Dallas played in Denver on Friday. Denver won. And an interesting note from that game. I don't know if you guys saw this.
Yes. Wait, did Sweeney actually coach that game?
Yes. Jay Kidd was sick. He didn't make the trip.
Oh, yeah. I didn't. I legitimately didn't know that.
Yeah, I think he had jokeritis.
That's been known to happen. So they were playing. They were playing on the the IST in season tournament court, and the story that I read said it was Grant Williams. I don't know if it was other players, but Grant Williams goes out there for the shoot around in the morning, and he's shooting threes at one end. You know, maybe it was both ends of the court. He's shooting threes, and all of his shots are short. You know, you've heard of the Scottsdale flu, you've heard of the Miami South Beach flu. Maybe the altitude, but he's like, wait a minute. How could every single one of these shots be short? Yeah. And
legs felt fine. Didn't even go to shotgun Willie's the night before.
Right. And some of the other Mavericks players are and the point here is the Nuggets wouldn't have shot around on that court in the morning. They would have shot around at their practice court, which is up on like the seventh, fifth or sixth floor of the arena. And the Mavericks players were like, wait a minute, this doesn't seem right. And they got out the measurement and the 3-point line was too far back on the new court. So they had to scramble and repaint the line during the day on the new court.
I mean, and that's one of those things, like, shouldn't that just be like pretty standard operating procedure to get like 3-point lane? Like, there's certain lines that don't change based on the court. But anyways,
I actually did some research on this. This was so fascinating to me. They didn't decide that, you know, Zach Lowe wrote about this. They didn't decide that they were going to really do these specialty courts until like August. So they had to scramble to do them all. And there's three different companies that do it. So I would say whatever company, and I don't know which one, whatever company did that Denver court, better check their other courts to check those 3-point lines.
Yeah, right.
Some of them might not have been used yet.
There's been talk like the in-season tournament's this new thing and this new, like, you know,
dry new line.
It's been talked. Yeah. And then there's been talk about the 4-point line. Maybe they're just trying to get a head start on this. Who knows? Listen, old Jackson, grumpy old Jackson. He's about 17 years old. He's already a grumpy old fart saying, oh, this is further proof that these courts shouldn't exist. Hey, these courts were a stroke of genius. You know why? Because it's been like 3 days now and everybody's still talking about these damn ugly courts.
Wow.
Jackson, they're trying to engage your lack of attention generation. That's what they're trying to do.
Another quick Grant Williams thing. Grant Williams wore a Kelly Green number 62 Jason Kelce jersey post-game tonight. The Eagles beat the Cowboys and he's strutting around in an Eagles jersey. And I would say that is a dangerous thing to do in the city of Dallas. I'd say it's a bad idea, but the last time the Mavericks had a diehard Eagles fan playing a prominent role on this team, they went to the Western Conference Finals. So He's replacing Jalen Brunson as the primary Cowboys fan antagonist in the city of Dallas.
Well,
it's hard for me to believe Grant Williams from Charlotte is a Eagles fan. But
I mean, hey, Markeith Morris from Philadelphia is a Cowboys fan, so go figure.
No, that's
he also went 7-9 tonight, which didn't hurt his cause from wearing whatever he wants to wear.
He's been really good for Dallas and everything they could have hoped for, really, so far, I would say.
By the way, how many points did LaMelo Ball have in the fourth quarter of this game?
I believe he had 23.
A lot.
Man.
Yeah, so he had 7 going into the fourth and ended up with a 30-point triple-double. So it was 23 or 25 or whatever. He was going crazy. It was a wildly entertaining fourth quarter, him going back and forth with the Mavs.
How about this?
Going
how
back
about
and
this
forth
for
the refs?
Unscheduled... How about this for unscheduled trivia?
Ooh.
You may have seen that Tyrese Halliburton had a 43-point game against the Hornets on Saturday night.
And lost.
Which the Hornets won that game.
Yeah, LaMelo actually guarded Tyrese on the final possession successfully. It was a pretty remarkable thing to see.
All right. Unless you read this stat, I will be stunned if you get it. And I almost think that I'm in danger of being wrong, but I read it.
I have no idea what the stat is. I didn't see it.
Tyrese Halliburton had 25 points in the third quarter of that game.
Mm-hmm.
It tied a Pacers record for most points in a quarter. Who did it tie with? You'll never get it. It's happened within the last couple of years.
Happened within the last couple of years.
I was going to say when you
Caris LeVert.
That's actually a reasonable guess. You'll never get it.
Who the hell?
Yeah, I was thinking the Rifleman Chuck Person when you.
That's
I was
also,
thinking it,
these are
well
just because Reggie
just because it wasn't because I assumed it wasn't going to be Reggie Miller. Last couple of years,
last
buddy.
Jordan Nwora.
Well, Jordan Nwora. No one would have guessed that. I do remember the game that I think he had a. I don't know if it was a 50-point game. I remember he had one game with a ton of points. Jordan Nwora with the Pacers.
All right, and real quick before we get to the Mavericks, Halliburton has, through five games, has 121 points and 62 assists. He's a fourth player in the history of the league with 120 points and 60 assists through the first five games, fourth player in history.
Mm-hmm.
The other three, two of them are active. One of them is in the Hall of Fame. Do you want to take a guess at that?
Harden, Westbrook, and Robertson.
You got two of the three. Harden in 2016 and Oscar Robertson in 1961.
The other active one, is it Luka?
No, it's a good guess, though. The other active one played tonight and his team lost.
Donovan Mitchell? No. Oh, they won. Duh, that's not a very good guess.
I'm not good at trivia, so I'm not taking a moral high ground here. I have it in front of me, obviously.
Let me just look who played tonight.
Oh, Steph.
Close to
Steph or Chris Paul?
Chris Paul. Wow. All right.
Yeah. In 2013. Okay. In other words, my point is Tyrese Halliburton's off to a great start. And he actually got banged up a little bit. It was through his first five games. I think he missed a game. And he's had a couple of great performances at the end of games that have gotten the Pacers a couple wins. Okay. Mavericks are 5-1, McMahon. Their one loss was at Denver without mm-hmm. Jason Kidd. I don't know if I would say that this is an unexpected 5-1. Luka came in great shape. He is playing well. Mm-hmm. He was 1 of 9 on threes tonight, so not his best shooting night, but has 12 rebounds and 9 assists. Grant Williams had a couple of great shooting games. You know, mm-hmm. that's what he does.
Shooting 50% from three.
Yeah, 4 of 5 in tonight's game. What's working and is this sustainable?
Well, I mean, listen, not to go Debbie Downer just to kick things off, but it's been, with the exception of the trip to Denver, it's been a soft schedule. Having said that, part of that soft schedule was opening up in San Antonio, which, went to Phoenix and won a couple of games there. But you mentioned Luka came in great shape. The first three games, Luka just played MVP basketball and like the shot we talked about, the crazy shot that he hit to cap that 49 point performance against the Nets, a couple 30 something point triple doubles. Grant Williams has been really, really good. I think the most encouraging thing about this six games, the 5-1 start for the Mavericks, though, has been Derek Lively II. It looks like a guy who's going to be a stud for a long time now. Are there going to be times he looks like a teenager starting at center? Sure. Such as when they go to Denver. But, you know, again, tonight, 15 points, 14 rebounds. You know, he's in there to, you know, for most of crunch time, except for when they went to, you know, get the free throw shooters on the floor. He's 7'1", 240, athletic as hell. I mean, the potential with him as a role man for Luka is almost literally through the roof. And the thing about Lively is everybody you talk to about him is like, man, he wants to be great. He's a smart kid. He works his butt off. He wants to learn. Again, I have my doubts about being able to really be a threat with a teenager starting at center. But this kid has far exceeded expectations. The thing is, like, even after summer league, you know, people around here were talking about him as a project. And then as you got closer to training camp, you heard a lot of, man, this kid's really made some major strides. He stayed in Dallas the whole summer.
It's kind of a surprise they were starting him, right? And then,
yeah, and they didn't even start him the opener. And J-Kid, they started him all through preseason. J-Kid didn't want to put too much pressure on him in the opener, so he came off the bench. But that's the night he came off the bench and was the best rookie in a game that was Victor Wembanyama's NBA debut. You know, he had I think 16 and 10 that night. And again, he's been very good. He's got the potential to be, you know, like a real impact kind of traditional modern center. By that I mean, you know, that rim runner, rim protector. And like I said, if you're looking at what are the brightest spots of the Mavericks 5-1 start, like, you expect Luka to play like an MVP type of dude. You don't necessarily expect a 19-year-old to come in and be one of the major reasons that they've gotten off to a good start. And that's been the case.
Well, let's be honest, right? Like, you talk about this, having him be part of a team that's a real threat. The Mavs at this point, like, if they make the playoffs this year, that's a significant step forward, right? Mm-hmm. And even watching him tonight, I got a chance to watch a decent amount of that game. Reminded me a lot of seeing James Harden with a young Clint Capella early on, yeah. Right? A guy, perfect lob threat. Like, you already see Luka finding him all over the place. And with his size, like, he looks like he's 12 years old. Like, he's obviously going to grow into being a bigger, more imposing physical guy. And he's already getting himself in the right spots, making heady plays, moving around in space, really building a connection with Luka already on the pick and roll. I mean, it's impressive to see.
Yeah, only one assist tonight, but like against the Bulls, he had 6 assists, and you know, a lot of those were off the short roll. So even making some reads that you don't necessarily expect to see out of a one and done who didn't play a lot at Duke.
Luka and Kyrie combined for 19 assists tonight. The Mavericks had 7 guys in double figures. That was not what we were seeing last year after the trade.
Yeah. Jaden Hardy is giving them some real punch off the bench, and he can come in and just be, you know, play off one of these all-star ball handlers and just come in and be super aggressive. But look, the Mavericks, I think they're going to be an elite offensive team all year long as they're getting Kyrie and Luka on the floor most of the time. That's like, duh. They're not a good defensive team. They're still not a good defensive team. They're winning because they're awesome offensively. And I think it will be tough to be much more than a team that gets into the playoffs if you're not at least decent defensively. They've got a ways to go to get decent defensively. Like, they gave up 72 points in the paint tonight. Now, I don't think you can put that on the 7-foot teenage kid. Like, there's still a whole lot of blow-bys. And I think that puts a ceiling that's not real high on this team. Big picture for this season, I think that what you're hoping, obviously, is that Luka goes in the summer feeling like, hey, this team made a significant bounce back, is back heading in the right direction. I think the best thing that can happen is if Luka goes in the summer thinking, dude, Lively's got a chance to be exactly the kind of big that I want to play with and to be that guy very soon. Luka asked them to get him a veteran big this summer. They had discussions for DeAndre Ayton. They had discussions for Clint Capela. Obviously, neither of those deals happened. That might be a blessing because Lively's not playing 30-something minutes per game if they go out and get one of those guys who have a big salary. So, you know, again, we'll see how it goes, but certainly got to feel good about 5-1 given some of the bad mojo that had been swirling around this team for the last basically year.
Well, and obviously if you've got Luka and Kyrie, your defense is probably not going to be great, but you at least have the bones of something potentially sustainable around them with the two of them and then Josh Green and Grant Williams and then Lively on the back line. Like those three guys around them, guys who can hit spot up threes with a role big, that's at least a lineup you can look at and say those guys are young, they can grow with them. There's some defensive potential around them, guys that are good fits with how they want to play stylistically. There's at least a path there to where you could say to Luka, hey, look, this is a group we can grow with going forward. We can find some more stuff to put with it. There's stuff to build on there, as opposed to the end of last season when you were looking at it going, man, what is the path here that's going to be viable? There's at least now you can look at it and start to see the beginnings of, hey, like here's a young, interesting team that you can grow with for a while.
Yeah, and there's times where they'll throw out an all 24 and under team. You know, like Grant Williams, you think of as a vet. He's 24 years old. You know, they've had this lineup out there of Luka, Jaden Hardy, second year guy, Josh Green, Grant Williams, and Derek Lively. So they've at least got a young core of guys who are contributing now, and obviously, you know, the arrow should be pointed up with all those guys. You know, I think Grant Williams kind of is what he is at this point, but what he is a really solid role player. And the rest of those guys have a chance, I think, to, well, aside from Luka, the other three role players have a chance, I think, to get significantly better. I'm not going to sit here and tell you, I think Luka's going to get a whole lot better. He's already one of the top, argue the number five or six players in the league.
Well, I wasn't foreseeing this, this kind of start for them, especially considering they had three new starters. I guess they had to improve the team at some way. But by the way, speaking of DeAndre Ayton, he came into tonight second in the NBA in rebounding for the Blazers, who are a few minutes away from going 4-3 and sending the Grizzlies to 0-7. I don't know if I just jinxed them.
0-8, I believe, right?
I think 0-7. Maybe it's 0-8.
Listen, DeAndre Ayton better be a hell of an offensive rebounder because that's the only way we can get the ball.
but he's never averaged more than 7 rebounds a game in his career.
No, that's false. What are you looking at?
I'm sorry. I screwed that up.
I was going to say that's definitely
he's been a double figure rebounder.
Sorry, I don't know why I was confused. anyway, this has been his best, 2 weeks in, but he's been his best rebounding season. His rebounding has jumped.
Hey, we'll hit on the Suns later. They've got pretty significant concerns in a variety.
Let's talk about it right now.
Okay.
Let's talk about it right now.
They've got a concern at center.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, girl-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. The Suns didn't make our list of underachieving teams or, you know, surprisingly bad teams that we did in the last pod.
Because they hadn't lost yet.
Well, they were 2-2. They were 2-2. They hadn't lost that night yet.
We did it that afternoon.
So they are 3-4. Now they beat Detroit today in the Monty Williams. Wasn't really a return game because they were in Detroit. Durant had 41 points. The asterisk on them is Bradley Beal hasn't played yet. I know you saw him, Bontemps, work out before the game the other day in Philly.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't use what you said to me, but you know, you thought he looked okay. He had another pregame workout today. I think he's getting close.
Yeah, I think the hope is he'll be back sometime soon. But I wouldn't put an asterisk on it because this is the thing we have talked.
Absolutely, you
can't, because this is the thing that's been talked about with this team since they made these moves. They have acquired three players. They had Devin Booker. They acquired Kevin Durant. They now acquired Bradley Beal. All three guys get hurt all the time. It should not be a surprise that we're 2 weeks into the season and two of them are hurt. Like, this is what has happened now for years with all of them. So this is not a Mikal Bridges is hurt situation. Like, these guys are always hurt. So, you know, maybe they'll all be healthy in 2 weeks and they'll play the rest of the year and they'll have no issues and they'll all play 65 games or more.
Okay, it's fine. I'm just saying, like, if you are evaluating the Suns after seven games and Beal's played none of them, by the way, their next game is at Chicago on Wednesday. Maybe Beal's ready for that. Maybe he's not. Frank Vogel is not giving a timetable. Beal's played none of the seven. Booker's played two of the seven, and he's had three different injuries now. He had a toe injury in the preseason that cost him time. He came back and played the opener at Golden State, where he and the Warriors looked very good. He hurt his ankle in that game. Mm-hmm. Missed some. What'd you just mumble?
He and the Suns, not he and the Warriors. Go on.
I'm always doing that. I'm showing my age all the time with these mistakes.
That's okay.
I'm just being honest. There's a point of honesty here. Anyway, then he hurt his ankle in that game. Missed a few games. Came back against, I believe it was the second game against the Spurs.
Second game against the Spurs, and had a great game in that game, despite the fact that they lost, and had his little chit chat with Sohan that Sohan pointed out on Twitter after the game. Show the rest, they lost. But when Booker's played, it's only two games. The dude's been awesome. 31.5 points, 10.5 assists, 7.5 rebounds. But it's, to your point, he's had more injuries than games played so far.
So he popped up on the injury report over the weekend with a calf strain. Frank Vogel said today that he had an MRI which showed the strain, and he's out.
We don't know, but calf strains aren't day to day. They're more.
Well, I'm more worried that he's got toe, ankle, and calf. He's got leg injuries that are maybe compounding on each other.
And it's toe.
There are different legs.
Right. The toe and ankle's on the left foot. The calf's on the right foot. You know, calves on the low end are like 10 days. Obviously, they can be nagging type of injuries. You know, Beal's been out with back spasms the whole time, but like, when they went out and got Beal, Bontemps, the urine-soaked wet blanket, doesn't, just because he smells bad doesn't mean he's wrong. Like, he'd been talking about.
Well, he's biding his time. He's ready to unload. So let's get out of his way. Go ahead.
Go have at it, Bontemps.
I mean, there's nothing to unload about. I said it before. You can't put an asterisk on them being 3-4 because of injuries, because you have to expect them to have injuries. The bigger issue,
they've
is
missed
Yusuf Nurkic
two of
is
their
not good.
Two of their stars for five games. Okay. And one of their stars for out for five games, and the other two, they had Beal out.
Yes,
but the other concern here is the oldest of their stars and the one with the scariest injury history is having to play 36 minutes a game and like super high usage, you know, heavy burden minutes, because, you know, his co-stars aren't on the floor. And while they did a nice job filling out the roster, it's like they've got a 1A, a 1B, a 2, and then a bunch of 7th, 8th, 9th men.
I'm saying they are not good enough with their rest of their team, or do they not have good enough chemistry at this point to withstand two of the guys out?
For sure.
That's all.
And no if, one's listen, arguing Bontemps, that, but they...
If the two of the guys both miss 50 games, then I agree. But go find me any team with three stars and two of them miss 50 games.
They've all missed 30 games a year for years. I don't understand what we're doing here. We're acting like it's, we should just set aside that they're hurt all the time and say, well, they haven't been healthy. We have to wait. The whole point is we're not even 2 weeks into the season and they're having injury issues. One guy's got a back issue. We all know those are not guarantees to just be magically healed. He could come back soon and be fine and have no more issues. He could be a lingering thing. And we all also know, as Tim pointed out, calf strains are really tricky injuries. You could miss a bunch of time. You could come back and re-aggravate it. Like, that's another nagging thing.
Or Devin Booker's come back like Luka did and go for a couple 30-point triple-doubles and a 49-point
That's
game.
Right. And it could be totally fine. But, you know, look, Devin's a fabulous player who now has a pretty significant history of muscle injuries. Kevin Durant has a long history now of pretty significant injuries. Yeah. Bradley Beal's missed a ton of time. You just have to assume those guys are going to miss time, and it's problematic. It's already happening right off the bat. And then on top of that, Yusuf Nurkic isn't any good.
Well, listen, we all know, hey, they've got to have their three guys to have a chance to be legit contenders. I think the question is, do they have such an issue at center that even if their three stars are healthy, like, man, Yusuf Nurkic is not closing games over Drew Eubanks at this point.
Well, and you can make a good argument Drew Eubanks is just better than him at this point.
And well worth tampering with if he's going to be closing games. But no, it's the DeAndre Ayton trade, I think he wasn't going to be leading the league in rebounding in Phoenix. And he wasn't going to be playing hard for the Suns. That's just the way it is. But
well, Nurkic is shooting like 35%.
Nurkic can't make a layup. Nobody really watched Portland last year, but anybody who watched Portland last year knew he couldn't make a layup last year. And he can't make a layup this year. He can't move on defense. The game they played against the Lakers, LeBron just walked by him at the end of the game. He just stood there and watched him go in for a layup. Like, this is what my argument was when we had the discussion about the DeAndre trade in the first place. The Blazers had nowhere to send Yusuf Nurkic. I'm totally with you, McMahon. We went over it. We don't need to rehash the whole thing again. I understand the chemistry issue. I understand why they did the trade. But the fact of the matter was they made a trade that significantly downgraded them in talent, and they tried to justify why they did it. And maybe the chemistry thing will outbalance that when everybody's healthy and around. It'll all work out. But I would have still said they should have tried to patch it up with DeAndre and let Frank Vogel try to get something out of him, try to get them to get something better than the package that was always going to be sitting there, which was Yusuf Nurkic and Nassir Little, because Portland wasn't getting them anywhere else.
Well, they got Grayson Allen on that, but I hear you.
Yeah, he shot 45%.
Nassir Little's not playing when they're down two stars.
Right.
He shot, hold on. He shot 65% in the restricted area last year. And he shot 45%, you know, basically 3 to 10 feet. So, yes, there have been times in his career where he shot higher, but I mean, you know,
is anybody who watched him play last year, if you ask scouts, if you ask people who watch the games, they'll tell you he couldn't make a layup last year and he can't make one this year.
Listen, maybe they should just throw Bol Bol out there. Isaiah Thomas knows a lot about basketball. Seven footer, the best ball handler, best shooter. I mean, some people.
Let's give a little context here.
The game was in Detroit today.
And they had Isaiah Thomas bad boys jerseys. They had this whole bad boys thing. They're celebrating the great bad boys Pistons teams. And so Isaiah Thomas was in the booth with George Blaha in the fourth quarter. Legendary Pistons announcer. And then they start talking towards the end of the game with Bol Bol's in the game about Bol Bol. And he says this, quote, "You're talking about somebody who is talented, extremely talented. And you're talking about the unicorns. We just saw Wembanyama the other night. His skill level is just as good. And I think when this young man gets a chance out on the floor, he's going to be something special in this league also."
Listen,
I am tired of hearing people say that Bol Bol is like Victor Wembanyama. It is
Shaq said it the other night.
How many years has he been in the league? Like, if he was that good, we'd know it by now.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculously insulting.
Shaq said something like they have a similar skill set, but Wembanyama is more consistent. That's something.
But listen,
Shaq said something like that.
And you know what? Like, here's the concerning thing if you're a Suns fan. Who does Isaiah, when Isaiah Thomas comes to Phoenix, where's he sitting? Who's he buddies with? Who's he buddies
with? The owner. He's buddies with the owner.
You know, they've got to find a way to get Nishpia's phone and block that number.
So I have spoken to Matt.
Like if Bol Bol was playing, he'd be blocking everything. That's how they got to block that number in Nishpia's phone.
I have spoken to Matt Nishpia about his relationship with Isaiah Thomas. And he has made it clear to me that while Isaiah is somebody that he respects a lot, he's on the board of his mortgage company. At least he was. I don't know if he still is at this moment, but he was on the board of that. That doesn't happen by accident. But and yes, Isaiah was around some of the Suns front office when he first bought the team. But as of right now, I don't think he's got a prominent voice in the Suns.
Hold on.
Organization. Having said that, they did sign Bol Bol.
And I'm doing my best, Luke. I'm calling for the replay. Calling for the replay review. Hold on. Who's at the replay center? Is that Chris Paul? Chris Paul, what do you think about Isaiah Thomas's involvement in the Suns front office?
Well, I'm just asked. It was insane to hear Bol Bol compared to Victor Wembanyama. I'm tired of hearing it.
Here's the thing. Isaiah Thomas.
Bol Bol was cast aside by the Denver Nuggets and the Boston Celtics, the two best teams in the league. Perhaps.
And the Orlando Magic, who's not one of the teams.
Actually played some for the Magic last year, they wanted nothing to do with them this summer. So perhaps everybody's onto something here.
And also,
Chris Paul said that in an effort to get back at the Suns. I feel pretty good that Isaiah Thomas did not have a significant role in Chris Paul getting traded for Bradley.
Oh, yeah. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I know.
He feels a different way.
Chris doesn't always believe what he says.
I believe that he believed that one. But anyways.
Let's get back to the Suns.
That was an interesting little side action tonight.
Yeah, the Suns, though, have two major concerns. One, you just got to hope for the best with, and that's the health of their three stars. I don't know how they address the concern they have at center, because it kind of already did. And you could argue it created a bigger concern.
Yeah.
What they're trying to do, at least now, it's hard to judge it now because Booker and Beal are out. What Frank Vogel is now trying to do with Nurkic is they're trying to play through him on offense.
Yeah.
So in this game, they ran offense through Nurkic. He had 7 assists. He took just 4 shots. And they're trying to use him more as a facilitator than as an endpoint. But they're also trying to plug up leaks. And I mean, their starting lineup tonight was Kevin Durant, Kadia, Bates, Diop, Nurkic, Eric Gordon, and Grayson Allen. 3 of those guys should be coming off the bench.
Fellas, we've got breaking news. The Memphis Grizzlies got to win.
Oh, wow. I jinxed the heck out of that.
They came back.
I jinxed the heck out of the Blazers.
Basically, from the moment Brian said, yes. I have my phone here. Basically, from the moment Brian said, Grizzlies are a few minutes away from going to 0-7. I think they scored 1,000 points.
Yeah,
from that point,
it was like a 23-2 run sparked by Wendy's haterade. Yes.
I do what I can.
Everyone in Memphis should do a golf clap for Wendy for saving the day for him.
And Ayton probably didn't get another rebound.
he probably didn't. Yes. A lot of baskets went in that time, so I doubt he did.
All right. Well, congrats to the Grizzlies. I tell you one thing. They needed it.
Ooh, boy, oh, boy.
Anyway, I'm saying the Suns just – you are – the moment that the Ayton trade happened, Bontemps, you were firmly in the negative column. That's all been recorded. That's fine. I say just wait a little bit because in the preseason when those guys were clicking, they were pretty awesome looking.
Yeah, but that had nothing to do with the Ayton trade. Those are two separate buckets. They had their three guys out there for a quarter, and they look great.
Well, like, the other thing is this. If they had those three guys out there, healthy and clicking, who's playing center might not matter all that much. And I wonder if it's like, you know, last year we spent most of the year, what are the Nuggets going to do at backup center? Well, the answer is they're going to play small ball for the few minutes that the Joker's not on the floor. I wonder if come playoff time, their starting center is not Kevin Durant, or not starting center, but the guy who's playing a lot of center is not Kevin Durant. Now, you know, again, that gets back to the first issue of health and durability.
Right.
But yes.
Right.
By the way, Jackson reports that ESPN, with 7 minutes to go, which is about when I mentioned it, Portland had a 94% chance to win.
It was big. It was impressive watching it. Just the points just ticked off.
Before great. We move on from this Detroit Phoenix game, yeah. I just want to say so. I was talking to a scout who was watching the Pistons within the last few days, and he told me that Cade Cunningham is the best guard on the Pistons roster. That's not breaking news. And that Marcus Sasser, who's their first round pick out of Houston, they picked him with the 25th pick.
Mm-hmm.
He said he's their second best guard.
It's interesting. Does he, Asar Thompson is a forward?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Marcus Sasser's been good. It would be great if Monty Williams would start him and take Killian Hayes and punt him to the moon because he stinks.
Oh, God.
Instead, he's
Killian Hayes hate.
Not, it's not hate. He's objectively one of the worst players in basketball, and he's starting over a lottery pick and over Marcus Sasser, also who's also good.
The last time,
I don't think Jaden Ivey didn't play in this game because
he was sick. He did not play. He's been coming off.
I don't think
the bench.
Jaden Ivey is real thrilled that he's not starting. But Sasser, now granted, again Ivey was out, but Sasser had 22 points, 4 assists in this game tonight. I'm just saying, this scout who's been around for 20 plus years, he was very, very high on. He, you know, Sasser played, I believe, 4 years at Houston. I don't know if they were all at Houston, but he played 4 years. So he was a little bit more maybe ready than some other guys. But anyway, I just thought I would squeeze in some Pistons coverage since it's really, we really talk about the Pistons on here. And I was certainly surprised to hear that.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. All right, one of the teams in the Western Conference who had been playing pretty well was the the Golden State Warriors, who had a pretty nice win in opening in the in-season tournament in Oklahoma City the other night. Although it came without Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, he tweaked his knee, but Steph hit a runner at the buzzer, which Draymond hit the rim, and somehow it wasn't goaltending. I'm still not exactly sure why it wasn't goaltending, but whatever, it went in, and that was a nice win for them. They did go into Cleveland tonight and take their second loss. The Cavs used a big lineup against them, their regular lineup. And look, it was a road game in Cleveland on a Sunday night. I'm not going to freak out about the Warriors dropping it, but this particular game that they played tonight was an indication of the worry that you have with the Warriors, which is, my gosh, are they small? They play so small. Steve Kerr.
I wish the listeners could have seen the text chain when Northeast Ohio's own was regaling us about his favorite team and how they would win the finals if it was Cavs Warriors.
Oh,
sweep.
Yes, he did.
They would dominate.
Playing the parade route, I believe.
I said that if the Warriors played the Cavs in a series right now, the Warriors would be in trouble.
And then the great thing is, right after that, SportsCenter tweeted a graphics that says Cavs snapped 12-game regular season losing streak to the Warriors.
What does that have anything to do with it?
But now, though.
It's not a commentary on the Cavs' strength. It's a commentary on how small the Warriors play. It's stunning how small the Warriors play. Kevon Looney played 15 minutes.
Well, he played.
Dario Saric played 13. After that, they pretty much played ultra small, and watching the Cavs just work them over with their size was amazing.
Wow. I didn't. Looney had 11 rebounds in 15 minutes. What? That's a confusing decision, because Looney, like when they won the championship a couple years ago, Looney was a huge part of it, especially the last couple of series. So that's interesting. You know, Chris Paul can't hit a shot right now. He had been awesome as far as facilitating. Only 2 assists tonight. He had the rare more fouls than assist performance. A bump in the road for the CP Sixth Man of the Year campaign tonight. That's okay.
Well, I'm not analyzing this particular game. I mean, Evan Mobley had 16 rebounds. They brought Tristan Thompson into the game, and he played like 5 or 6 minutes in the first half. And I think he had 5 rebounds in 5 minutes. The guy who was on our set last year. They play with, I'm just saying, like, and you know, we know that they are a heavy shooting team, but I don't know if you can win at a high level when you are so susceptible to being dominated in the paint.
Well, not without Draymond playing at peak Draymond level, which he's
correct
not there right now.
Correct. I mean, look, the Warriors have a couple of things going on, right? One is Draymond's not in shape. He missed a bunch of time with his own, I believe, calf injury, missed or sprained ankle, missed all preseason.
Yeah.
He's clearly getting himself back into prime Draymond shape. The bigger issues are Klay Thompson's been up and down, mostly down, and Andrew Wiggins has been awful. And when they play small, when they're successful, it's because Andrew Wiggins is playing well and playing bigger. Like you mentioned, Looney in the finals against the Celtics, the other guy who was going crazy rebounding the ball was Andrew Wiggins.
Wiggins was just awesome on every front.
Right. And he's been terrible. So that you combine those things together, and that's why on a day like today, the Warriors are having a lot of trouble.
Well, look, they're 5-2.
Those guys.
And they're 4-1 away. Like
last year, I believe they had 11 road wins all season.
Yeah, I'm just saying, when you see them play a team with size like the Cavs, it was just eye-opening the way this game played out. Eye-opening. And
well, they
didn't shoot well. Had they shot
Zion?
Well, yeah.
I mean,
okay,
Zion's
fine.
Not exactly he's not tall. And he's not like
he's got size, though.
Yeah, but he's not like an awesome rebounder. He's not like a guy who, you know,
Evan Mobley's not an awesome rebounder either.
That's fine.
He did
awesome. Chris Paul did have, I haven't checked it tonight, but the other day when I looked, and it's gone slightly in the other way in both directions, but I don't think I've ever seen a guard whose average plus minus, which was 9.5 per game, plus 9.5 per game, was twice his 3-point percentage. He was shooting 4.8% from 3-point range and was a plus 9.5 on a per game basis. That's hard to do if you think about it as a guard.
You know what? One of the most interesting stats, I mean, of the whole NBA season, I'm taking a big detour here.
What's this?
What's that?
The Lakers, when LeBron is on the court, this is following their loss at Orlando on Saturday.
He was on the court a lot in that game, too.
I think he paid 36.
Hmm.
But how's this for your plans to reduce LeBron's minutes? When LeBron's on the court, the Lakers are plus 47.
Mm-hmm.
When he's off the court, they're minus 70.
Yeah.
Perhaps they didn't have the greatest offseason in the history of the universe.
So the issue there is if you reduce LeBron's minutes, you're really going to be lightening his workload because you're probably not. Well,
get to go home in April.
I say that. Yay. I say that, but they were a 7 seed last year and got to the West Finals, so who knows?
Well, look, I think a Laker fan would say they're missing like 3 or 4 key players. But it's, you know, nonetheless. I mean, the thing about it is Anthony Davis is actually putting up some spectacular numbers. He's putting up 26, 13, and he's leading the league in blocks per game so far. He's also leading the league in minutes played.
He's been truly, really good on defense in particular. I mean, well, it's impressive how much of a rim presence he is now.
Right. I mean, he's averaging almost 4 blocks a game. I'm just saying, and they're absolutely heavily dependent on LeBron being out there.
Well, and so let's be honest, a part of that is because the guy who we thought was going to be their third best player has gotten off to a poor start.
It's been terrible.
Like Austin Reeves, I'm not saying I don't think the guy is going to have a good season, but he's stunk it up so far this season.
By the way, really low-key, pretty intriguing game. I mean, never say low-key with the Lakers involved, but Lakers Heat, two teams off to a bit of a scuffle of a start. Heat are 2-4. That's an interesting game Monday night in Miami. Very interesting game.
Yeah, well, I'm not really forming an opinion on just about anything yet. I would just say, worried about that small lineup for the Warriors, worried about that number on the Lakers with LeBron. Those are two things that, because you're talking about, you know, we're talking about them going small with Draymond and Wiggins as the two bigs. There's times where they play Gary Payton II out there at one of the forward spots. And like, you know, he does his thing where he comes flying in from the corner and, you know, then we'll stretch the floor and spot up out there. I mean, he makes plays, but you know, loose balls. Like, I don't know. I'm just saying, when the Warriors have Chris Paul out there,
yes,
and have Draymond at center, it's a big lift that you're asking them. And
you're
in this particular
small
game, it really came out.
Yeah. And small before, Steph was the smallest guy on the floor. Now, if you're playing small with Chris Paul, you've got a short 38-year-old guy out there. And you know, they're, the death lineup, you could call it small, but you had a 7-footer out there, right? Kevin Durant. You had Iguodala, who like certainly was an athletic and physical player. So yeah, it's a little bit different than when they've gone small in the past.
And before we move on, Donovan Mitchell's off to a pretty terrific start to this season. He came into tonight averaging 33. He had 31 in this game tonight. He's shooting the ball, you know, as well as he ever has. He came in shooting 53% from the field, and he was an 11 of 19 in this game. He's also, to this point, been pretty effective and pretty aggressive playing perimeter defense. The Cavs' defense has not been good this season. They came into this game, I think, ranked 17th or something like that. They were obviously first last year. But Donovan has not been necessarily the guilty party there. He's played pretty well. So I will also recognize that while the Cavs are scuffling a little bit because they've had some injury issues,
they're going to be just fine now that they're healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. Donovan is putting up, you know, really impressive numbers to this point. Okay. Also putting up impressive numbers, Victor Wembanyama, who had an explosive performance, 38 points Thursday night, shortly after we recorded our last podcast. Wasn't as good today. They lost today. They blew a big lead and lost at home to Toronto. And he was not as much of a factor down the stretch of the game as you'd like to see him. But he entered the weekend like fourth in the league in points in the clutch. I don't think he improved that number in this game. But he is, you know, so there was a game I went back and looked it up. LeBron's rookie year, he had a game against the Nets. The Nets at the time were the two-time defending Eastern Conference champs. They were loaded. Jason Kidd, Richard Jefferson, Kerry Kittles. Can't remember who else was on that team, but they played this game against the Nets. It was probably about March 25th. The Nets were a top three team. Richard Jefferson had like 35 in that game. They played pretty good. The Cavs were, you know, like in 10th place, and LeBron put up 41 that night. I think he had 41 points and 13 assists, maybe 6 or 7 rebounds, and just was dominant down the stretch of the game. At age 19. And it was like the first time you saw him really flex his muscles totally control a game, dominate a really good team down the stretch, and just put up one of those jaw-dropping performances. And it came in about his 65th game.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Victor did against the Suns on Friday night when he put up 38 with 10 rebounds.
And scored 10 points in like the last 4 minutes. Right. I mean, just that, took the game
that's
over.
That's kind of what LeBron did in that game. I don't remember that.
Yeah, and took it over when Booker was cooking.
In his fifth game.
Yeah.
On the road. That Nets LeBron game was in Cleveland. On the road against a team that they had just beaten. And you know the Suns wanted to get back. Booker was playing and playing well. And actually, his finish got a lot of attention, but I'm going to point out the start. They started the game 9-0. Victor, I think, had two or three of those baskets, and they knew they were going to be facing a little bit of an onslaught. And Victor came out and set the tone at the start and then finished it as well. It was an extremely impressive moment and just continues to verify. I'm just saying he did in his fifth game what LeBron did in his 65th game. I compared those two games. It was extremely impressive, guys.
Well, and he had, 38 and scored all over the floor. And Bontemps, you said in one of our recent pods, basically like the 3-point shooting with Victor is something to really keep an eye on in terms of what's his ceiling going to be. And he had a great 3-point shooting night that night. I mean, I joked about him going 0 for 42 on pull-ups in pregame, but he hit one, going full speed up the left wing, pulled up, boom, hit another one. A 7'4" guy is the pick and roll ball handler pulling up into a three and just crazy stuff. Man, this guy's touch and feel and just ability to create around the rim is insane. Like the skill, there was one where he spun baseline, goes around the rim, wraps up. What's that Street Fighter character's name? DeHaslam or whatever. Like he has that DeHaslam arm, just wraps all the way around the rim, left-handed, and finishes with touch on the other side. Like 7'4" guys don't move like that. They don't have that kind of feel, and they don't have that kind of touch. It's insane some of the ways this guy finishes when he's not even, sometimes he's just going to be able to jump and dunk. But when he's not, some of the finishes are ridiculous.
The other thing is Devin Vassell, who's their top scorer, he got hurt in the first half of that game and wasn't available for the second half. Also wasn't available tonight. And
who started in that spot today? I can look it up.
Malachi Branham.
Malachi Branham did? I thought it was Trey Jones.
Yeah.
So that
St. Vincent St. Mary High School. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
I do. I have heard of it, and he did start. Trey Jones played a ton of minutes.
He went 8 of 9 shooting.
He started.
So the Trey Jones thing is very interesting to me because I don't think there's any question that if this season was just about, hey, let's win as many games as possible and see if we can make the playoffs, that Trey Jones would be their starting point guard.
No question.
They're going with the Sohan experiment. Again, I get the logic. But, man, I was just looking at numbers. They have one guy on their team that has a positive net rating. It's Trey Jones, and it's plus 10.8. Small sample size and all that, but it's 162 minutes. And then just if we're talking about how can you maximize Vic, again, small sample size, it's 75 minutes. The Spurs are plus 32.8 per 100 possessions with those two guys on the floor in those 75 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, having a point guard for him makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and so I'm curious to see if they stick with the Sohan at point guard, at starting point guard experiment, or if there comes a point in the season where they go to Trey Jones there. And who knows, maybe there's something that happens before the trade deadline where they can plug Sohan into a forward spot and go forth that way.
The thing I've really liked the past couple games, we talked about earlier in the year that Victor was floating around a lot on the perimeter and kind of playing like a shooting guard. The last couple of games in particular, he's, like you said, McMahon, he's been much closer to the basket. And then getting him the ball at the basket, it makes a big difference. Like he's got pretty incredible touch, not just in terms of shooting the ball, but also like you don't really think about it, but obviously he's so big and so long, they can just throw the ball like 14 feet in the air and he can go catch it. Like there was a play in today's game, Keldon Johnson just threw the ball up and Victor went and caught it and like back tapped it Charles Bassey rolling down the lane for a layup. There was another play where they just flung it down court and he caught it like Randy Moss as a wide receiver before it went out of bounds and hit somebody for a layup. Like having him near the basket, be able to just throw the ball up to him like that. He's got such good body control and feel. It's not just him shooting. Obviously him shooting at the rim is good, but he could set up other guys with passes all over the place from there, just from his court vision and being able to manipulate the ball like it. And it's been good to see him doing that, because then it gets his size more in play instead of him just being out on the perimeter.
You know what? When would have been a really good time to test that out?
Last play of the game.
Yeah, like when they're trying to run an inbounds play with a tie score in the last seconds of regulation. And I don't know what the game, I don't know what they were supposed to be doing, but
I think I'm not 100% sure. I didn't fact check this to make sure, but I think the Spurs had two timeouts and I think they called them both in a row to set up this play. And it was supposed to be a lob, and then
It was supposed to be a lob, but Victor just ran around in a circle for a few seconds.
It wasn't good.
I mean, you could throw this guy, I guess his arms are ridiculously long, but he never got within like 12 feet of the hoop.
It was very bad.
Not that long.
It was not good. He also had a really good look at a three in overtime that could have tied the game
out.
And it rimmed out.
I think they were down four at the time, but either way, it would have changed the game. By the way, because even though it was not the Spurs, Scotty Barnes was awesome today, particularly down the stretch at 30-11-6. And he has been, Pascal Siakam has been not good for the Raptors, but Scotty Barnes has looked terrific in the early going here after an up and down sophomore year, to put it mildly. He has really looked great coming out of the gates. And certainly for the Raptors, that's been pretty exciting. See him, and it was fun seeing him go toe to toe at times with Victor today. Though it is funny, so I've watched a few of these Spurs games now. You see, guys, there's like one guy a game who tries to attack Victor on an ISO drive and just get it bounced off their head, and then they don't do it again. Like we saw Andrew Wiggins do it in the preseason. Today, it was both Scotty Barnes and OG Anunoby kind of got in their bag, tried to go into him, and then it was just like boink, just like bounce off their head. And it's like, all right, not going to try that again. It's just funny seeing like a guy on a team try that every game and just get nowhere every time.
Barnes, by the way, is, let me see what he had. His final numbers were today. He had 30, 11, and 6 today. He's averaging like 22, 10, and 6.
He also made 5 threes today, which is a pretty encouraging development.
Yeah, he's been really shooting the three to a decent clip this year early on.
Yeah, he's over 40% on threes.
I mean, it's very early. He had one game where he had 4 for 6. So, but if he can,
his first 2 years, he shot 29% or something like that.
I mean, if he just becomes a 35-36% 3-point shooter, it's a big difference, let alone if he's better than that.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on Victor. Okay. Before we go, Monday night in New York with Tim Bontemp scheduled to be in attendance, I believe.
Ooh.
All right. Well,
see Bucks Nets. I'll be in the same city as James Harden yet again.
You're in the same city right now, although maybe I shouldn't assume that. Oh, James Harden with the Clippers he said today he's going to play. The interesting thing for the Clippers, they haven't revealed what their starting lineup is. The Athletic has reported something that has been heavily speculated, which is that Russell Westbrook will not be going to the bench, that Harden will start alongside Westbrook with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard at the forwards and Ivica Zubac at center. So I don't know if they'll finish the games that way. I remember the Lakers bending over backwards to make sure Russell Westbrook kept his starting job there and not going so well. Westbrook is in a different headspace and is playing much better. So I'm not surprised that they're going to go this way, at least to start, but I don't know about this decision.
It doesn't make sense except for we're not the ones who have to manage the locker room, right? Like, it's just you have to understand the human element that goes into things that should be obvious basketball decisions, right? Because the obvious basketball decision is, hey, we've got three guys who like to have the ball in their hands that are, you know, three max players that like to have their ball in their hands. Now that you've got James Harden join Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, like Russ is the fourth offensive option, man, that's not a real good fit. Where if Russ is coming off the bench, Russ is like the you know, instant offense off the bench. That would make a lot of sense there. But you're dealing with the Hall of Fame ego here. It's not easy. At some point, they're going to have to convince Russ that it's his idea to come off the bench. And, you know, I mean, just take out billboards applauding his sacrifice, whatever you got to do. But on this team, he needs to be in a six-man role. I'm not going to say sooner than later, but certainly before it's time to try to make a playoff run.
Well, the alignment that would probably make more sense, right, would be to start PJ Tucker at four and have Paul George at two and Kawhi at three. I don't know how Kawhi is going to like playing four, especially at the end of games, but I assume that this was all discussed with all the powers that be, make sure everything's nice and understood. But yeah, I think more than anything, I just think that it's a balance issue.
Yeah.
So, I didn't think Westbrook was going to work out there. So I don't know. Maybe I've lost my privileges to criticize it.
Well, but let's really look at it though. He didn't work out when it was him and the two stars playing together. It was not going well. It worked better when it was him without one of them or both of them, because then he could have the ball in his hands all the time. That's why it makes sense to have him in a six-man role off the bench, mm-hmm. where he can have the ball in his hands all the time. And then where his deficiencies are not killing you in the critical moments of the games. And look, they, whatever reason they're trying this now, if this is the lineup that they're going with when they go to the playoffs, they're going to have the same kind of Clipper ending they've always had before. Now, maybe at some point there will be a change and he'll go to the bench and he'll buy into it. And maybe they have to do this first to see if they can make it work, whatever. But I would say this is a bad sign for the Clippers ultimately getting where they want to go, because I would have thought after all of the time that there's been building up to this trade happening, which is not like it's a surprise, it's been talked about for five yeah. months now, you would think everybody would be on the same page and be like, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have Russ come off the bench and cook. We're going to have James start. Everybody's on board. This is going to make sense. But the fact that you can't even have that happen today, after months of everybody being aware this was a thing and talking about it and being ready for it, it doesn't, to me, bode well for this experiment. Because to me, this is a discussion that you should have had before the trade is made, that this is not going to work.
I think that there was a discussion and it was going to be, I'm going to start. I think that was the discussion that was had before the trade.
Well, then you should be telling Russell Westbrook you can get punted then.
Well, like, yeah. And honestly, seriously, like at this point, it's like, Russ, like, we love you. We respect you. But dude, you're not a shot caller anymore.
You're not like, on a $44 million not, contract anymore.
This is, you're not with
he
the
He has
Oklahoma
the support.
City
of Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. That's why he's on the team. He has the support of Harden, it seems to.
Look, that's yeah. I'm just saying. You can have all the support
for 1 year in Houston, then they both want to get the hell out of Dodge.
Look, no, they can all have the support of each other all they want. I'm just saying, if this is the outcome, after all this time everybody had to prepare for this, and this is how we're starting out for the Clippers, doesn't bode well for their chances of getting to where they want to go. That's all I'm saying.
I agree with that.
So since we did the last pod, Harden had the press conference where he said, I am the system. I don't want to rehash all that. From Harden's standpoint, his sacrifice last year didn't get him what he wanted.
Listen, that reminds me of like when Wendy says in the group chat, I am not a podcaster. I am the podcast.
It's
man,
true.
Like, you're damn right. Golly, we just got to spot up and space the floor and, you know, play hard.
When James Harden sat on the podium in Boston after game one, the second round of the playoffs, he had 45 and they won without Joel Embiid. And he said, I haven't felt like this in a long time. It was pretty obvious he had no desire to be playing second fiddle to anybody. And
well,
watching that
I think
press conference,
he would have felt a little bit better if they came with a 4-year max.
No.
That, he might not have loved it, but he'd have taken the money. When he didn't get the money and he had to play second fiddle.
I understand,
but
that's not what happened. That's not why what happened this summer happened. Hmm. He did not like playing second fiddle. It was quite obvious. He still believes.
That's why he was running to Houston until the Rockets said, James, on second thought, buddy.
I understand, but if they'd offered him a 4-year max, he'd have signed it.
That's not the point.
Yeah, after the Rockets didn't offer him one.
That's not the point.
I understand that.
The point is, by the end of the season, despite winning the assist title, despite having Joel win MVP, despite everything, besides
despite him giving him a Rolex,
despite all of it, all of that. At the end of the day, he was clearly not satisfied with that role and didn't think he thought he could still be the guy. And it was not a coincidence to me that when he or surprised to me that he sat there the other day and talked the way he did. Now, some of that was clearly missiles fired at Doc Rivers, who he obviously did not like by the end of his time there. And as Doc has said in interviews since, I think Doc was pretty aware of that.
But the feeling was mutual.
Yes, exactly. But James Harden did not like being second fiddle guy. And, you know, we'll see how this whole experiment goes. I think it was the right move for the Clippers to make. I think they should have made it. But
yeah, well, he wants to get paid at the end of this one, too.
Well, we'll see how it goes.
He does look like he's in good shape.
I just don't think this bodes well for there. No, he looks great. That everybody who was in Philly will tell you he looked great the last month.
Yeah,
he looked ready to go. I think he's going to be motivated. You know, I have no reason not to believe he's going to play well, but this starting lineup thing is not a good sign, I would say.
All right. Well, we'll see how it plays out. They started on an East Coast road trip. They play them then in Brooklyn, right? They play the Knicks and then the Nets. Is that what
they play the Knicks Monday and the Nets Wednesday? Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm sure James will always be welcome back in Brooklyn. I'm sure he'll be very comfortable there. All right. Thank you for listening to Hoop Collective Podcast. We'll have a lot to talk about next time we speak. See how that Harden Clippers first game goes. Thank you to Mr. Bontemps. Thank you to Mr. McMahon. Thank you to Jackson. And thank you for listening.
Adios, amigos.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.